Welcome to episode 110 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. 110, of course, being the number needed to beat Alan by about 20. Welcome, Alan.
At the very least, it would take that.
This is mostly a Tiger episode, 1 week of coverage here, but we're going to start off with one of our few non-Tiger stories. The tour is looking to put microphones on the caddies at this week's Shell Houston Open. They're not necessarily going to broadcast any of it. They're basically going to mic them and see what they get, perhaps for future broadcasts.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting little spiel that they're doing with that. I think it'll be very interesting. They do, once in a while, do catch some pretty good banter back and forth between the player and the caddy. If you enjoy watching golf, that's the type of stuff you want to know. You want to know when they're arguing whether it should be a 6-iron or 7-iron or the wind or whatever. I think it makes for a much more compelling round of golf.
I'm not certain, though, that this is necessary. And the argument for that is when we're following the leaders, they have the boom mics that can pick up the conversation. The caddies know when the boom mics are out. If they're perpetually mic'd up, the concern isn't necessarily what they say when they're on TV, but what they say when they're just walking down the fairway. Or heck, I mean, what if one of them goes to the bathroom or something? I mean, there's a lot of time in a tour round when the boom mics aren't around and caddies are kind of off the record. And with mics on them, they'll never be off the record. There's a bunch of all that audio is going to be sent somewhere and recorded. And
yeah, I mean, that is true.
What someone says on the third tee on Thursday about the hot chick in the stands, or why they hate the guy they're playing with or his caddy or something, or what they ate last night, or
how slow their playing partner is.
Yeah, or any number of things. It's kind of a caddy player privilege or privacy issue. There's that argument too. As it is now, they know when to censor themselves, and that's when the boom mics are nearby. Censoring yourself for 5 hours might be tough.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, that's a ton of audio to have laying around, to have 5 or 6 hours of caddy player banter going back and forth, but we'll see how it ends up.
I'm not certain either that there will be a whole lot of interesting stuff said. Tiger talks to his caddy a decent amount. Phil and Bones, of course. Outside of that, even Sean O'Hare talking to his caddy. Not a whole lot of terribly useful information. It was wind. It was mostly yardage. It was on that line, where to hit it, you know, at that tree or that, you know, house with the rounded window top, things like that. I'm wondering if the on-course reporters might be a little nervous. Their jobs might be in jeopardy because that's all the information they give us.
Yeah, that is very true. There's probably a couple of them that could probably go away anyway, but nonetheless, at least they're trying. They're trying to come up with new things, and will it work? I don't know. I think one of the concerns they had was the quality of the sound. I guess I would assume NBC would have some decent sound equipment to be able to mic these guys up, but you never know.
Yeah, I vote for Gary Koch being fired first if it comes to that.
No argument from this corner of the world.
Next story, the biggest story, of course. Tiger wins in somewhat dramatic fashion, I suppose. Kind of a yawner.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. I mean, it was dramatic in the sense of, yeah, he nailed the birdie putt at the end and whatnot, but and we'll talk about this upcoming here, but wasn't a ton of great golf played by the other guys at the top of the leaderboard.
Or necessarily by Tiger. Distance control was a little bizarre all week. I think that the point to be made about his play this week is not he won, and you could say he won with his D game or B-minus game or, you know, somewhere in there, but he won by making putts. His iron play, his driver, still not where it needs to be.
No, definitely not. I mean, that's always been kind of one of the weaker areas is his driver, and he still sprays it. He still recovers like nobody else can.
Right, but his distance control has always been one of his strengths, and right. He was blowing 8 irons over the green by 20 yards.
Yeah, or hitting 4 irons short, and I don't know. I mean, the course, obviously, by looking at the scores, the course played incredibly tough for the week, and you got a little bit of wind, and it was quite a bit for these guys to handle.
That time off, we speculated, it seems to have, you know, his putting was a little off. Of course, putting on greens, you know, or something at Isleworth while you're recovering is different than getting out and putting on PGA Tour courses. His short game in general, flops, chips, bunker shots, seems to be right on, and seems to be that time off, the time when he could only practice those kinds of shots, seems to have really paid off. His short game at this point seems better than anyone else's, and I'll include Phil Mickelson, who's usually at the edge just slightly.
He played good, but at the same time, you know, he's still rusty. What is this, his third event back?
Like, he's picked up right where he left off with his winning percentage, right around 33%, you know.
Yeah.
He had to win by now, or else he would be in a slump, see?
The Tiger slump, oh no.
Yeah. Anyway, a again, shows that he can win by not necessarily playing his best, but by doing just enough. And that's the change some people are talking about. He used to be dominant, and now people are saying he's turned from dominant into clutch. He wins by just enough. He doesn't blow people away by 10 shots anymore. He wins by one or two, by making the key putt when he needs to.
Yeah, or you could say that the competition has gotten better and he can't blow them out.
Possibly. We'll be right back.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal.
A stroke is a stroke.
From the first tee
to the 18th green,
there's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball.
And in a game
where just one shot can decide a championship,
the ball you play makes a difference.
And that's why there's only one ball.
There's only one ball.
One ball I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Our forum topic of the week is brought to you by Triclone, and we're already up to 7 pages, and he's claiming that Tiger is back, and that is a fact, which, if you looked at the comment right after that, it was kind of funny, but pretty interesting to go through the some people in the forum who thought that Tiger is back, and some people who thought it was just an epic collapse by Sean O'Hare, who had a 5-shot lead going into the end. And I believe, if I remember correctly, Eric, you had...
Where do you stand on it? Did Tiger win or did Sean O'Hare lose?
I think you could. I think it's probably a combo of both. You know, I don't think Tiger played phenomenal. I mean, he did shoot 67 on a day where a lot of guys were shooting right around par or plus one or minus one.
He had the second best round of the day,
But I mean, I'm going to probably put it, if it's a combination of both, I'm putting it more towards a collapse of Sean O'Hare. I mean, you have a 5-shot lead going into the final round, and for him to shoot one over for the day, I mean, he just didn't look comfortable at all playing with Tiger.
Well, and it comes down to, I'll go 60-40 collapse over win. You know, Tiger did what he needed to do. He shot, like I said, the second best round of the day, bested only by one guy who beat him by one shot and shot 66. There were a couple of 67s, so he was tied for second for best round of the day. So I'm not going to take that away. And obviously, he made the putt on 18. They were tied. He didn't go to 18 with a 1-shot lead and make a routine par. He made the putt when he had to. And he beat 143 other people. Or 142 other people. Sean O'Hare, though, his collapse, and that's the thing, he wouldn't have collapsed. Tiger could have still won by one, but had Sean O'Hare not dunked his ball in the water on 16, with Tiger needing to pitch out and make par at best, to dunk your ball in the water there is just insanity. I don't get it. There were 20 yards of green to the right. I don't care if you're putting from 50 feet. You get the ball on the green, you don't hit in the water. That was epic. What could have been, that was a 2-shot swing the wrong way from the way it could have been. I appreciate, you know, and it's tough to say because you'll remember, of course, Sean O'Hare went for the flag at 17 2 years ago when he went into the final round leading Phil Mickelson. He was 2 back at the time when he reached 17. He went for the flag there. We called it ballsy. We called it gutsy. We called it all kinds of things. His shot at 16 shows me that there's a thin line between ballsy and stupid. Tiger Woods is almost always on the right side of that line. Phil Mickelson is almost always on the other side of that line. He's good enough that it pays off sometimes. But now twice in big situations, we've seen Sean O'Hare not quite, you know, he's close to being the right part of the line, but he doesn't quite have maybe the skill to pull it off and be ballsy instead of smart.
And I think the other thing too is that it never should even have gotten to that point. He never should have been in that position where he would have to do the stupid, incredible shot. I mean, I don't think he hit in the final round. I don't think he hit a fairway until like the sixth or seventh hole.
He was right very early. You're right there.
He was in problems here, and
but he made the turn at one over. You know, he shot 2 over on the back nine. He did birdie the 9th hole. He took bogeys at 3 and 7. But that's the thing. Tiger started with 2 birdies. Sean O'Hare bogeyed. They went to the 4th hole, which Tiger bogeyed. But they went to that hole with the gap closed to 2. And when it was started the day, obviously at 5. So Tiger applied early pressure, and Sean, you know, slowly, you know, he didn't choke at the end. He didn't shoot 4 over in the last 4 holes or anything. But it was slow and throughout the day. 1 over on the front, helped by his lone birdie, and 2 over on the back. Well, he had a bad round. And what do you think, too? I mean, he's working on a swing change.
Now, for working on a swing change, that's pretty impressive. But at the same time, you know, when all the chips are on the table and you're going for it at the end, something's got to be comfortable enough that he can not continue to blow his shots right and things like that. I mean, you can go on a swing change, and that's fine, but still, it's what's between the ears. So
which side of the line is he on? Was it a ballsy play? Was he trying to close him out? Did he just pull it? Did he, you know, I mean, he seemed to think it was fine. Johnny Miller didn't say, and he loves to point it out when it happens, he didn't hit it a little heavy or anything. So, but the line they were aiming at, that's the line where they were aiming at the house with the round window. That was 30 feet right of the pin, and he seemed to hit it kind of at the pin.
Right, and I think that's where it probably does fall across the line for more of a stupid play, where he didn't need to fire at the flag. I mean, there are times where you need to, and that wasn't one of them. And with somebody going through a swing change, if he's not quite comfortable with it, hitting it over water, it's probably not the time to be firing at the pin, especially when you don't need to.
So back to the form topic again, Tiger's back. Yeah, okay. I mean, he's won, so he's back. I guess we're a bit split. And leaning slightly towards Sean O'Hare gave it away rather than Tiger Woods took it away. So you can voice your opinion in the forum topic of the week. We'll link to that in the show notes. And for two more stories, we'll be right back.
In this game, you never hit the same shot twice.
You have to be totally prepared,
totally prepared
for whatever the course gives you.
I practice shots
most people don't even think of.
Out here,
if you want to win,
you can't take anything for granted.
Can't take anything for granted. Especially
your golf ball.
Especially your golf ball.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back this week. A Michelle Wee controversy, but this one bizarrely caused because she read the rules.
For as much as we've begged on her for the past, yeah, this one's hilarious. I mean, this one... Congratulations to the LPGA for having egg on your face for your typos.
Basically, it's this. You'll remember last year that Michelle Wee got in trouble because she pulled out of Annika's tournament, then showed up at the next week's tournament early to practice. The LPGA had a rule saying you could not practice before Monday of tournament week last year. For members, she wasn't a member last year, so she was exempt, but it was still kind of uncouth of her to do that, perhaps. Especially since she supposedly pulled out with an injury. So that was last year. This year... they changed the rules to say non-members couldn't play till Friday at 5 p.m., and they meant to say that members, of which Michelle Wee is now, couldn't play till Sunday at 5 p.m. They did a copy-paste thing, and both things said Friday at 5 p.m. Michelle Wee read the rules, showed up Saturday, played 9 holes, played some rounds, you know, played some holes or something Sunday morning or day. LPGA players who knew what the rule was supposed to say were kind of ticked and peeved. Michelle Wee said, it says Friday at 5 p.m., the LPGA said, yeah, we made a typo. We'll have to fix that. So she didn't break the rules because she read them, even though the rules were supposed to be different.
Yeah, it's kind of a humorous little story. Apparently, they've probably laid off a few too many people at LPGA headquarters who are supposed to do quality control.
Yeah, well, that would be everyone. This goes back to when Bivens was first hired, and a bunch of people either quit / resigned or were fired. We can't seem to avoid controversy even when she does follow the rules.
Just,
I don't know. Just she better not wear white shoes after Labor Day or some bull crap like that, because she'll probably get in trouble for that too. Something else to set the bloggers off? Slightly. Those that, you know, I guess are 40 years old and remember a time when Davis Love was relevant. And I do, so it's not to say he hasn't been. But he hasn't been for the past 5 years, really. Yeah, he hasn't done much. He's battled injury here and there. Didn't play in the Masters last year and didn't make the Masters this year. He missed the cut at Bay Hill. Turns out, bizarrely enough, if he had skipped Bay Hill, he would have made the Masters. But he tried to ensure that he would be there. So he played, he missed a cut, and turns out then that he's not there. He's number 51 by almost no margin. Luis Oosthuizen and Matt Goggins sneak in at 49 and 50. Davis Love not at the Masters. Unless he wins this week.
Yeah, that's the only way he can get in is by winning the Shell Houston was an open classic. But yeah, I mean, it's, what, 0.04 of a point.
Yeah.
He can send a thank you card to Mr. Pat Perez.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wrote this in the notes, so I'll just read it here. Love fell out of the top 50 in the world ranking by 0.04 of a point, and all came down to a shot by Pat Perez on the 18th hole at Bay Hill that cleared the rocks, framing the water by about a foot. Perez was able to play his next shot from short of the green and made bogey to tie for fourth. That gave Perez, who was already eligible, enough points to move up to number 48 and knock Davis Love out of the top 50. So had he still made a bogey, obviously the result would be the same, but I think the thinking is there, he probably would have made double.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the same point, it shouldn't have to come down to something like that. You know, if you want to play in the Masters, play better. I mean, loved it.
It's also possible, though, that the Masters could do a little more to give some exemptions locally. He's played well in the Masters. He's played well for a long time, had an established career. He's a Southern guy. There's something to be said for maybe giving him an exemption when you give some to people we've never heard of from Asia. And I'm sure that's good for a few people in Asia. You know, they probably get a kick out of watching their guy in the Masters, but these guys don't contend or anything. So
yeah, I mean, it's good marketing. They want to open up the brand over there, but yeah, at the same time, it'd be nice to, you know, to see him there.
They only have like 80 people in the field. You know, what would 81 be? That's the argument. You know, Davis is not the one pushing that argument. He wishes he had played better.
Who knows? Maybe he wins this week and it won't matter.
He's done it before. He's won the week before to get into the Masters. So there you go. And for those of you wondering why he would have made it had he not played instead of missing the cut, because him playing bumped up the available points because he's a top 50 or was at the time top 50 player. So that bumped up the world ranking points available because it was a stronger field. So that's why missing the cut was worse than not playing. By the way, Tiger Woods back up to 10.09 with Phil Mickelson in second at 8.51 in the official world golf ranking. So starting to pad his lead again a bit.
Yeah, it'll be double by the end of the year.
That does it for episode 110 of the Golf Talk podcast. For the show notes and links to all the stories we've talked about, check out the website. If you download this through iTunes, you might never check the show notes out, but do so and click the links. And especially the one for the forum topic so you can contribute your thoughts to the thread. For Alan Olson, this is Eric Boroseski saying, I'm off to Disney World.
I'm off to shovel my driveway.
Bye-bye.